Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your end of the week. Hopefully it's the end of your week. Darren McFarlane, that's me. Willie D, not here, not present. He's in Chicago. Blackhawks and Predators tonight, 7:30 puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6:30, everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. And, of course, he'll be in the TV booth with Chris Mason. Chase McCabe is alongside.
Hello.
That's him.
How are we doing?
Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Good. You said you were in a good mood.
I am in.
Why?
Fantastic. I don't really have a reason. It's Friday.
You have to. You made a point to say that.
I don't have to.
Yeah, but there's a reason. Like, I feel like there's a reason you said it.
There really isn't. I'm just legit in a really good mood today. It's Friday. Sun's out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little cold, but not bad.
Guns out?
No, guns are in because it's cold.
So cold, yeah.
Guns are in. I had a donut before the show. I mean, that's good.
I did, too.
You did?
I double dipped.
You did. What does it say about me that I love the glazed. I'm very simple. You've known me for a long time. I'm just a simple person in general. I am a simple man, as Leonard Skinner said.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, this is what I am.
I think you answered that. Was that an ask?
Yeah, I think
ask and answer?
I think I answered my own question.
Yeah, I think you did.
I'm in a good mood. I just am.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Excited about the show. It's been a good week.
It's good to see Emily from the Predators who showed up. That's how we got donuts. Can we say that? We can say that.
We can say that. Yeah. We just said it.
We just did.
Yeah.
That just happened. No taking that back.
It's kind of like when somebody says, can I say damn? Well, you just did.
You just did.
Cat's out of the bag now.
Yeah. Shout out to Emily from the Preds.
Rocking her Winter Classic jersey, which I still don't have. I can't believe it.
I need to go get one, too.
I know. I almost feel guilty at this point. Like, how do I not have it?
Yeah. Because, see, I have...
Because here's the deal. Like, I bought... You know me. I don't really wear jerseys anymore.
Yeah,
unfortunately, when you get to a certain age, you kind of stop wearing jerseys. I've reached that age. But I want them for keepsake, right? I mean, I got an All-Star jersey because I always want to remember the All-Star experience here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I've got jerseys. So I want that. I will wear it from time to time. But I need one to, you know, for keepsake, to remember the Winter Classic. That's something we will take with us forever. We'll always remember that trip to Dallas.
That was such a fun trip,
too. And the night after the Winter Classic.
Yeah, most of that.
We'll remember a lot, some of it. And then the next day, that feeling.
Yeah.
That feeling of dread of having to travel back.
Yeah, but at least we had to fly.
Well, barely.
Our colleagues were in a car.
Yeah. I'm not sure what was the better option. Our flight from Dallas to KC. Little bumpy.
Yeah.
Or a lot bumpy.
Was that the one where I had fallen asleep? Or
Yeah. It's where the pilot got on and said, you're not getting any service because basically we're going to bounce around from Dallas to KC. And I was like, oh, great. And you fell asleep.
I thought that was on the way to Dallas.
No, that was okay. That was coming home.
Well,
which was great timing, by the way, after what we just talked about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm white knuckling it and you're asleep.
Listen,
I'm like, Chase, I got a bad feeling about this one, bub. I don't think we're going to make it out of here. Chase.
I sound like the engine.
You do. You do sound like the engine. I'm not sure if it was the jet or you snoring.
Yep. And look, I've been in that time period, I was on so many flights, whether it was to Dallas or Kansas City or Baltimore. So I lose track. But anyway,
we digress. Last night, got one of the televisions in the house on, low volume or maybe even mute. I think it maybe was on mute on NBC Sports Network. You know, Ovechkin, he's chasing 700, right? He's trying to get there. Everybody's been keying in. They keep breaking in. Is this the moment? Is this the game? Well, he actually scored last night, finally. He's been stuck on 698 for a bit. He did get to 699. But that's not why I'm telling the story. So I walk into this room of the house, and I'm on the phone. And like I said, the television is muted on NBC Sports Network. Ironically, they are in the studio portion. Mm-hmm. Catherine Tappan and this other tall gentleman in the studio, because Jeremy Roenick is no longer with NBC. And if you've noticed, they've been kind of trying people out. It's been Ben Lovejoy. I feel like there's somebody. Who else have they trotted
in
there?
I've seen Patrick Sharp more.
Well, but yeah, but Patrick Sharp's been there for been there. A couple of years.
Yeah. But it seems like they are.
There's somebody else I think they've had in there, but they've been kind of, you know, trying out people to replace JR, who we all know the story by now. And I'm looking, and I'm on the phone, and I'm looking, and I'm like, it's not like I don't know who that is. I have an HD television. The picture's quite clear, crystal clear. But I'm going, huh? What?
Who does be?
Nobody said anything. I didn't know that about that.
We had no idea.
You didn't say anything to me about it.
I didn't know. I had no idea.
Willie never said anything yesterday on the way out the door, or the hours that he spent with us leading up to out the door. But how Gil, Skillsy, in studio. And I'm like, are there studios in Chicago?
Yeah.
I don't believe so. Aren't they in New York? I don't know where their studio. I thought they were in New York. I don't know where NBC's or NBC Sports Network's studios are, but nonetheless, Skillsy, getting it done.
Yeah.
Rocking the studio. NBC Sports Network last night. And I had to like get off the phone. I was like, hey, I'm gonna have to call you back, or we're just gonna have to end this because I need to turn up the volume.
Go check out Skillsy. He did well. He did a good job. Not that anybody should be surprised by that. I mean, look, the Predators have used him more on TV. He's done some intermissions when they've been on the road. Obviously, his work with us, you know, on the radio side. I mean, Skillsy is a talented individual. So did a fine job last night.
On many fronts.
Yes.
For sure.
And he was my co-host for Smashville Live and had Austin Watson and
Craig
Smith.
He didn't bring it up?
No. No.
I feel like nobody knew.
I don't know if anybody knew.
Did I miss it on Twitter? Did he announce it? I swear I saw nothing.
When I found out about it, it was because C-Mace tweeted a picture of him on the TV. And I was like, well, I got to turn this on.
Really?
Yeah. That's the first I heard of it.
Hmm. Do you think he knew?
I don't know. This is an investigation that we're going to have to open up.
I think they were together on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Did Hal talk about going with Chris that day? Remember, we didn't talk to him because...
Yeah, they were together.
Weren't they in Fort Campbell?
Yeah, and Hal said he had a good time and it was cool. But yeah, he never brought it up.
Hmm. That's interesting. Well, nonetheless, Skillsy, good job. Thumbs up. I was shocked when I walked into the room and I was like, that's Hal. What's going on? So, good job by him. Tonight he'll be in the radio booth with Pete Weber. 7:30 puck drop, last road game of the month for the Predators, and it's against the Blackhawks, and then they'll be right back at it here Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena against the Blue Jackets. Speaking of all that, when we come back, Adam Vinken from The Athletic, he is typing furiously on his computer. I don't know if he's whipping out a story right now, if he's breaking news. I'm not sure what he's doing, but he is pecking away over there on the Athletic computer. We will bring him into the fold. He's in studio. He will spend the first hour with us next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. He is going to put his computer away and join us now. No, I mean, you don't have, I mean, you were busy during the break. So was I.
I'm always busy.
We settled everything. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren and Chase. How are you?
Doing good. Smash
Fantastic.
Brothers.
Fantastic.
Smash Brothers tonight, 6 to 7.
Actually, 6 to 6:30 because of pregame.
Oh, that's right. I'm cutting 30 minutes out.
You are. Jerk.
Sorry.
The jerk store called. They're out of you. An abbreviated version of the Smash Brothers tonight from 6 to 6:30 on ESPN 102.5 The
Game.
Well,
nice lead-in. That's very good.
Yes.
That'll be a good lead-in. What will you guys be talking about?
I'm sure we'll be talking about these upcoming games against the Chicago Blackhawks and Columbus Blue Jackets, as well as the imminent return of one Ryan Ellis, who practiced yesterday in full with his normal partner, Roman Josi, for the first time. All signs point to him playing. John Hines said a decision would be made this morning, but we will be talking about the impact of the return of Ryan Ellis, whether that happens tonight or tomorrow or next week.
I suspect it'll be tonight.
So I imagine so.
Let's go on the premise that it's tonight.
Yes.
What is reasonable to expect over the next 48 hours in two games, what his impact will be?
Well, I think about a few years ago when he came back from his off-season knee surgery. I think he had one game where the Predators limited his ice time, and then the second game he was back to playing his normal amount of ice time. He was averaging roughly 24 minutes per game before the Winter Classic, which is the game that he was hurt. So I don't imagine him playing 24 minutes tonight, but I imagine him playing more than 20. I don't think they are going to shy from putting him out there if they feel he is ready, just because of how important he is individually, as well as just how dominant he and Roman have been as a pair this year.
Monday. It's kind of a big day. There's not a game,
no.
But it's kind of a big
What's
day.
What's happening?
Well,
starts the week.
It's the last time you can make a trade.
Yes. 2 p.m. Central.
2 p.m. Central.
Yes.
Imagine that right as we go off the air on Monday. So, with that being said, what do you suspect? What do you think is going to happen? How much do you think, if any at all, these two games play into the mindset of David Poile?
I think they play significantly into his mindset.
Do tell more.
I do feel that to give you the proper answer, you might have to ask me again on Sunday, which don't, because it's all of our days off, so leave me alone. But if you want to text me, you can. But I do think that...
You're a little frisky today.
I'm always a little frisky. Anyway, I do think they play significantly into what David Poile decides to do. I think if they win both of them, perhaps he is more willing to buy. If they split them or get 3 or 4 points... Perhaps he stands pat, as we like to say at this time of year. If they lose both, especially if they lose both in regulation, perhaps he's more willing to part with one of his pending unrestricted free agents. I really do think that David Poile will ultimately determine what he's going to do based off of this back-to-back set that the Predators are about to play.
I'm going to go down the same rabbit hole as Ryan Porth took me down Wednesday night and Preds and Ciders.
Oh,
because you're,
is this where you got animated?
Well, I mean, this is. I mean, Adam is agreeing, and I guess when I come
agreeing
back to
with
this,
who? Cause him
I,
or you.
Ryan,
because
I have a question based off your question and his answer.
These two games, are they important? Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not changing anything. They're not like all of a sudden, oh, they're going to the playoffs if they win both, or if they lose both. Oh, they're out. That's it. Forget about it. Oh, they split. Oh, same old thing. I mean, What does it really change in the mindset of the general manager these two games? I mean, you honestly believe it's you win both, you're a buyer, you lose both, you're a seller, you split, you stand pat. I mean, really? These two games?
It's not as cut and dry as that. But let's just say, for example, the Predators lose both of these games in regulation. So I'm looking at the standings now. They're 3 points out of the second wild card spot, which is inhabited by the Calgary Flames with two games in hand. Let's say the Predators lose both of these games in regulation, and the Flames, I think, may have two games before the deadline.
By the way, they play the Flames in 6 days.
Yes, that might be a gigantic game.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's say the Predators fall 7 points back. I don't know if that's mathematically possible based on the other team's schedules, but let's just say they lose both of these games in regulation to a Blackhawks team that's lost 7 of 8 and a Columbus team in which more than half the roster is in the infirmary. If they lose those two games in regulation and fall 5-6 points back, if you're David Poile, perhaps a player like Mikhail Granlin, for example, becomes a little more expendable than if you win both of those games or if you stay in the race. Perhaps I can go back and reformat what I said before. I don't think David Poile is sitting there thinking that Friday and Saturday are ultimately going to decide which way he goes, but I do think they are going to play a key role. There are so many teams in this league right now that are in their position, whether they're in a playoff spot by a couple points or out of a playoff spot by a few points. There are very few sellers right now. It is a seller's market, as they like to say. If you're the Los Angeles Kings, who have already traded Tyler Toffoli and Alec Martinez, or if you're the Ottawa Senators, who have traded Dylan DeMello, or if you're the San Jose Sharks, who have traded Brendan Dillon, those teams are out.
Devils.
The Devils. Those teams are out. They're looking to take advantage of many teams that think they still have a chance, whether they're in a playoff spot or they're very much in the race for a playoff spot. And I think that's why the dam will burst by Monday, because teams will ultimately determine whether or not they really have a legitimate chance of making the playoffs. I just don't see this group as they're still a win now team. The Predators are, even though they're not in the playoffs, they are built as a win now team. But I do not believe they are in position to make another go for it move, with my air quotes that no one can see except for the two of you.
Yeah.
Because they've, one, made a lot of those already over the past several years, many of which have backfired, and B, there's no guarantee that they're going to make the playoffs. So I think whatever David Poile decides to do, it should not be a move. If they decide to make a move, it should not be a significant move. I think it should be a depth move. It should be an unsexy move.
Is there really Kreider? What are the significant moves out there, really?
Well,
there's not
probably
really
the ones that we don't know about. You know, there's sometimes there are those trades that nobody saw coming.
There's always one of them, as Elliot Freeman told you yesterday.
Right.
Elliot
brought that up yesterday.
There's always one or two that are not
on
radar.
That's on anybody's radar. Holy moly. Did they really just do that?
Well, Chris Kreider of the New York Rangers is the prize, I feel
like. He's the number one carrot that's going to get dangled out there.
And you imagine that many of the Stanley Cup contending teams, whether it be Boston, whether it be St. Louis, whether it be Colorado, those are the teams that are going to be looking for Chris Kreider. You saw a run of defensemen the other day. A couple of which I think would have helped the Predators just based on how
they played. Which ones would you put in that group?
Dylan DeMello
and
Brendan Dillon. I think both of them would have helped the Predators just based on their style of play and what the Predators need. So the top remaining defenseman on the board is Sammy Vatanen of the New Jersey Devils. Now, John Hines coached Vatanen for parts of 3 seasons, so he is familiar with Vatanen. But one, Vatanen is currently on injured reserve with a bruised right leg, so he's damaged goods. And B, you look at the prices for defensemen. Brendan Dillon went for, I think, a second and a conditional third. Marco Scandella, who was originally traded for a 4th-round pick, a month later went for a 2nd-round pick and a conditional 4th-round pick. So Vatanen, his price is going to be pretty high. And personally, I don't think he is strong enough of a defenseman to break the bank for. I think you look at Dylan DeMello, who the Winnipeg Jets were able to acquire for a third-round pick. That's the kind of capital the Predators, I think, should be spending.
How would you describe him?
Dylan DeMello?
Mm-hmm. You want to know how Willie described him when I said that?
How did he describe him?
He said serviceable. And I said, what do you need? What do the Predators need with a serviceable defenseman that you're going to give a third-round pick for?
Two and a half.
Well, they do have two third-round picks. So they can use one of them.
So what does a serviceable defenseman do for this roster?
It allows you to pay. It allows you to play one less of Dan Hamhuis, Jared Tenorti, Yannick Weber, or Matt Irwin.
So you're saying those guys are not serviceable?
I think they're barely replacement level players.
I don't view them the same way that you do. A serviceable guy, to me, is a step above a warm body. Serviceable is a step above a
with
warm
respect
body.
To the aforementioned defensemen, I think they are warm bodies compared.
But if you're going to describe that about DeMello, then
I think
what
he's serviceable.
Really
I believe he would be serviceable as Elliot as Willie said, which is a step up above
so
a warm
you think
body.
It's a step up. Okay.
Yeah, I believe Dylan DeMello would have been a step up over the depth defenseman that the Predators currently have.
I just think. And Darren, we've talked about this. I think David Poile is just sitting here going, my team is, they're right there. They are right there from going to another level and then making a run. And so, do I want to mess with that or do I need one piece? He really does. I just don't think he knows what he wants.
I mean,
to
I
do.
Guess what I'm getting at is what is a DeMello? What would he really have done for this roster? I mean, honestly.
Well, the most important
thing. He's going to come in and all of a sudden everybody's going to be like, wow.
No, but they don't need to add. Think about the moves they've made at the trade deadline over the past few years, whether it be Ryan Hartman or Mikhail Granlund, Wayne Simmonds, Brian Boyle. Those players, were expected to play significant roles mm-hmm. for this team, and none of them really did. Mikhail Granlund, since the coaching change, but before that, he was almost a non-factor. The most important thing is that Ryan Ellis is coming back. You want to talk about a valuable defenseman. One could argue that Ryan Ellis is one of the most valuable defensemen in the NHL.
And that could be the move that does take him to the next level. I'm not saying it's going to be right away, but, once he gets back in there and he stays healthy and gets back to the form that he was at before he got hurt, that could be the piece that they need.
By the way, one of the other moves that you missed was Mike Fisher.
Ah.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's what Carolina's trying to do. They're trying to recreate that with Justin Williams.
Yeah, that's true.
But I guess in all those cases, how many worked out?
Very few of
them. How many of them changed the complexion of the team?
None of them.
Right. So I'll just keep saying what I've been
Which is why I think they shouldn't go for a significant move.
So let me start with what would you do, not David. What would you do?
I would have, before this run of defensemen the other day, I would have attempted to add one veteran defenseman who could have played on the second pair with Matthias Ekholm, which, as you can see, has allowed, based on practice yesterday, Dan Hamhuis and Dante Fabro were working together. Now, when Fabro came to the NHL last year, Dan Hamhuis was his partner, and I thought they played pretty well, considering their role. I think Dante Fabro, as maybe we expected, has had an uneven rookie year. I think...
Uneven? I think it's, in my personal opinion, he's done exactly what I would expect from a rookie, playing significant minutes.
Which is uneven.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Right. Well, you expect that,
right?
Right.
So I believe because Matthias Ekholm, for the most part, has been in charge of shepherding Dante Fabro, that's brought down Matthias's impact slightly. I don't think Matthias has had as strong of a year as he's had in years past. As no fault to him. It's different going from having a veteran partner like PK Subban to having a rookie partner like Dante Fabro. So I think what I would have done was I would have acquired a preferably right-handed defenseman to play on that second pair with Matthias Ekholm, which allows Dan Hamhuis and Dante Fabro to play the third pair. Now, with respect to Jared Tenorti, who, when he made his debut for the Predators, it was his first NHL game in, what, 3 years? 3.5 years? Mm-hmm. He's been okay. And I think part of the reason why he's been okay is he really doesn't – he's not flashy. He doesn't – you're not really seeing a lot from him. So perhaps that makes him look better than he is just because he's not carrying the puck or making fancy plays. But I don't think Jared Tenorti is a long-term solution to be a quote-unquote second-pairing defenseman on this team. So I would have acquired someone more experienced and more and steadier to play on that pair with Ekholm to get Tenorti out of the lineup, to have Fabro on the third pair as he is. That's what I would have done. But I'm sitting here playing armchair GM.
I don't necessarily disagree with that either.
With a chair that doesn't have any arms. So I don't know. I'm playing barstool
That's
GM
hard.
Here.
That's hard.
Yes, barstool GM.
All right, so with that being said, then what do you think David ultimately will do? Move or no move? You think a move is going to happen?
And then I have hypothetical.
Or do you think that nothing's going to happen?
I do think something's going to happen, but I'm not sure it's going to be something eye-popping, as we've seen in previous years. Now, what's interesting is
addition or subtraction?
Addition. I think one name that's come up, and Elliot, I believe, mentioned him on your show yesterday, as well as his 31 Thoughts podcast, was Connor Sheary. I believe he mentioned Connor Sheary of the Buffalo Sabres,
of course,
previously played for the Pittsburgh Penguins, so he would have been coached by John Hines, presumably at the American Hockey League level, since John was the coach of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton
Penguins.
I think
he brought that part up, too.
So, not a great year for Connor. 19 points, 9 goals, 10 assists, and 53 games, but in the 16-17 season, the year the Predators lost to the Penguins in the Stanley Cup Final, he had 23 goals and 53 points. I imagine that may have had something to do with playing with one of Sidney Crosby
possibly, or
Evgeny Malkin, mm-hmm. but you know, if they feel they need, you know, extra in the bottom six, perhaps he could be a fit, just based on what Elliot has reported. But you know, when was the
Do
last
you think
time
that's that another player would be going the other way in a move like that? Or
I don't know.
Picks?
You think with Buffalo, they'd be looking for futures as they continue to rebuild, because it's been a bad year in Buffalo. I mean, they're going to miss the playoffs for what, the ninth consecutive year? Ninth consecutive
year?
It's
been a while.
Yeah. For that market, it's
last time they were in the playoffs is when Bruce Almighty came out, that movie. So
not much of a Bruce Almighty.
Remember, they won the cup in that movie. So.
Oh, yeah.
See, it only
it's
takes
been a while since I've seen that.
So what you're telling me is that the only way that the Buffalo Sabres can win the cup is in a movie in which Jim Carrey plays God?
I'm an Indians fan, yes.
Okay. Did the Indians win the World Series in that movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they got to the World Series.
Oh,
right?
They got to the World Series.
They didn't play the World Series out. They beat the Yankees, right, in the movie?
That couldn't happen because how could the Indians play the Yankees in the World Series?
In the ALC. I think it was to. I don't know.
I don't remember.
Now that you say that,
we'll look it up during the break.
I still get emotional when, you know, they win, but I guess I'm caught up in the moment. Was that the World Series?
Are you the only person who's ever been emotional watching a Jim Carrey movie?
No, I'm talking about Major League.
Oh, Major League. Major League. See, I'm still talking about Bruce Almighty.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't remember.
The Sabres win? It's when he's an anchor on the desk, and he's like, you know, the electricity keeps going off. Remember, they're in the locker room, and he makes the champagne bottle hit the sports guy so they can get away from the locker room shot and get back to him.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie.
I feel like I'm on an island.
Major League 2 is when they beat the Yankees, because Wild Thing was, I want Bregman. Or Parkman. Parkman. I want Parkman.
Bregman.
Yeah, Bregman. Yeah, that's bad. I thought I heard a trash can.
Wow. All right, we'll come back. More with Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got Zach Brown Band tickets at Bridgestone Arena Saturday, April 25th on the line for You Just Made the List. That's coming up at noon. Zach Brown Band tickets, Bridgestone Arena, Saturday night, April 25th. But you're going to have to bring it. That's coming up at high noon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe, Adam Vingan from The Athletic in studio with us. So you think you gave your opinion of what you would do, but what about what you think David will do?
I have a hard time imagining that David won't do something, just because we all know David Poile. He likes to have his hands in things, right? But I I don't necessarily disagree with you, Darren, that I think perhaps the best course of action with this group might be to just trumpet Ryan Ellis's return as your trade deadline acquisition and just go with what you have, because this team has made so many win-now moves, not just at the deadline. We're talking free agency and trade in the last 4 years. Ryan Johansson, P.K. Subban, Matt Duchene, Kyle Turris, Mikhail Granlund, Ryan Hartman, Wayne Simmonds, Brian Boyle. We can go all the way back to Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli, which did not work out well.
Don't do that.
That was bad. But on this current roster, there are plenty of players who were acquired in such transactions. The difference between the Predators at the deadline this year versus previous years is, one, they're not in the playoff spot. Well, last year they were contending for a Central Division title. The year before, they were winning the President's Trophy. So I'm not sure a splashy David Poyle-esque move is the best way to go, which is why I think if they do decide to do something, I think it should be something under the radar, something that bolsters depth, as I mentioned, particularly on the defensive end. But as Chase and I were discussing during the break, there, at least in terms of the names that are speculated to be out there, there aren't many that make sense.
Notice you never mentioned Josh Manson of the Ducks.
That would be interesting, just because of how Josh Manson has ingratiated himself to the Predators fan base over the years. Not only taking out Ryan Johansson, but taking out Mike Fisher during the Western Conference Final. And while the Anaheim Ducks-Nashville Predators rivalry doesn't have as much oomph behind it, because Kevin Bieksa is gone, Ryan Kesler is gone, Corey Perry is gone, Josh Manson, as I'm looking at his contract, has a has a modified no-trade clause. He's under contract through 2022 with a $4.1 million cap hit.
Oh, is it that? Okay, that's more than I thought.
Right. I mean, the Rangers have an interesting defenseman. I don't think it's a fit for the Predators, but you look at someone like Anthony DeAngelo, who is a pending restricted free agent, who has a $925,000 cap hit, who's having a career year with the New York Rangers. I don't have his stats in front of me, but I'm furiously typing away to find it. He has 13 goals and 45 points in 57 games, but he is the classic overpay at the deadline. He's having a career year. He's on an expiring contract. He's probably too expensive. Yeah. He does fit the offensive-minded, puck-moving type that the Predators like, but as we were talking about during the break, I think if I were to add a defenseman, it would be someone in the mold of Brendan Dillon, who's more defensively oriented. He's responsible in his own zone. He can play on the penalty kill. He can get, he gets in front of the net. That's the kind of defenseman they need versus another puck-moving, Roman Josi type or someone like that.
So I get the vibe from you that you'd rather either add like a piece, like a defenseman, like we're talking about, or stand pat.
Is correct.
Okay. So let's say from the other side of it that no matter what happens, but David gets approached about Mikhail Granlund, who I would say probably of the unrestricted free agents on the team gives him the most value, especially with the way he's played as of late.
Yes.
Is there, in your mind, a price that you can't say no to?
Well, you look at
some realistic price, I should say.
Well, you look at some of the prices that have been paid for forwards so far. You look at Blake Coleman, for example, who was traded from the New Jersey Devils to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Well, you can't compare them completely because Coleman has another year left on his contract versus Granlund, who's a pending unrestricted free agent. But Coleman basically was traded for two first-round draft picks. He was traded for an actual first-round draft pick, and Nolan Foote, who was, I believe, a first-round pick of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it was basically two first-round picks for Blake Coleman. First-round picks do not fly off the shelves at this time of year. The Predators have the Devils' second-round pick, which is basically going to be another late first-round pick because of how bad the Devils are. If a team was willing to pay a first-round pick for Mikhail Granlund, I don't think you can say no. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I don't think Mikhail Granlund is worth to another team a first-round pick, because even though Granlund has played exceptionally well under John Hines, I wonder if there's still some sort of buyer beware about, well, how is he going to fit on another team, because we saw what happened when he was traded from Minnesota to Nashville originally. Mm-hmm. He was a non-factor after being a nearly 70-point guy in Minnesota. So if you're another team looking at Granlund, are you thinking to yourself, are we going to get the Granlund who's had more opportunity and who's playing really well under John Hines in a smaller sample? Or are we going to get the Mikhail Granlund that came here under Peter Laviolette and struggled for 50-plus regular season games? So I think if a team were willing to pay a first-round draft pick for Mikhail Granlund, I do not believe you can say no to that. But anything else,
yeah,
I think you maybe hold off on it.
The other one that I look at is Craig Smith with an expiring contract. And
I would say the same thing for Craig as I did for Mikhail.
Yeah, and I brought this up with Elliot yesterday. I can almost see a scenario that if David can get the price that he wants, I don't think he wants to necessarily trade Craig Smith or anyone for that matter, but if he gets something in return, I could almost see Craig Smith, you know, circling back around to him this summer and trying to re-sign him, because I just feel like he fits this organization. I think they like him a lot.
Yeah.
He's a steady player. He's good for 20, you know, ish goals a year. So I don't think he's a part of the big changes that they need to make, but I think it just, the price has to be right.
Exactly. And it's amazing to me when I think about it. You know, it's hard to imagine the Predators without Craig Smith. Now, he's not...
I know. I made the joke to him the other night. I'm like, you've been here for like 20 years, right? I mean, it's been a long time.
It has been, I think, nine. It has been a long time. And, you know, he's not a player that one associates with the Nashville Predators. When you think of, you know, the great Nashville Predators, you don't think of Craig Smith. But there were only four players in franchise history who have played more games for this team than Craig Smith: David Legwand, Shea Weber, Martin Erat, and Pecorine. He's fifth, Craig Smith, and Roman Josi is right behind him in sixth. So, you know, he is associated with this group. You know what you're getting. And, yeah, if that were to happen, I imagine that, you know, if the Predators were to receive an offer they couldn't refuse for Craig Smith and they pulled the trigger on it, I would not be shocked to see Craig Smith be a member of this team again on July 1st. You know, he loves it here. He's been here for a long time. He's a part of this community. He's a part of the team. He has been for 10 years. So, yeah, if that were to happen, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And I think Elliot said to you guys yesterday that now more than perhaps in the past, teams and players are more willing to do that than they were before.
There's a player that I want to ask you about that we've talked about a ton this year. We can do that when we come back.
Ooh.
On the other side, we call that a tease.
A tease.
We'll do that. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour. More with Adam Vingan from The Athletic next.
Welcome back. Darren Donnick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Adam Vingan of The Athletic.
By the way, Bill Barnwell will join us to kick off the second hour. That'll be fun.
Yeah, he's had a lot of good stuff surrounding the NFL, but also the Titans, so we'll talk to him here in a few minutes. All right, Adam, Philip Forsberg.
Yes.
It hasn't been the year. Willie yesterday on this show, we tweeted it out. He said that he thinks before the year's over, Philip Forsberg will still hit the 30-goal mark. Darren and I said we will praise you to no end if that actually happens, because I don't think it's going to happen. He's just, something is off with him. He hasn't been the same. I understand he's streaky. He always has been. But
all goal scorers are streaky, unless you're Alex Ovechkin.
Right, but it just,
or others.
The big streak in my mind hasn't come for him except for early in the year.
Well, it did. And the thing, yes, at the beginning of the season. And the thing I think we've talked about this before, the issue that Philip Forsberg has had in the last couple of seasons, because remember, his first, three, four seasons, he never missed a game. And over the past two, three seasons, he's missed, you know, 15, 16 games, 10 games here or there. And the time of his injury, he's playing really well. I mean, he's a point-per-game guy or close to it. He set the Predators' record this season for the longest season-opening goal streak. You know, he was playing well, and then he got hurt in that early season game in Vegas. And since he's come back, he hasn't been the same player. So I think in order for Philip to reach 30 goals, he has to score, I think, 12 in the last 23. I think we said 12 in the last 23 games.
He's at 18 right now.
So, I mean, that's about half a goal a game. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
Now he's, just for comparison, he's 10 goals and 10 points back from where he finished last year. and he played in 64 games last season. So he's at 18 goals, he had 28, and he's at 40 points. So, look, he's, I guess, not that far off from his numbers last year. He should surpass those, at least points-wise, because he's tied assists. He had 22 assists all of last season. He has 22 this year. But he's a goal scorer, and that's what you need him to do. And I haven't seen it. And since the coaching change, you know, he's one of those guys that you're waiting to really break out, and it just hadn't happened yet.
Well, I'm the one who predicted he was going to score 40 this year, so how do you think
I
feel?
Did too. I was saying absolutely he's going to score 40 this year. This is the year, especially how he started.
What's interesting, though, is I'm looking at his 5-on-5 shooting percentage this year compared to last year, and last year he was at 10.2, and this year he's at 10.28. So he's basically shooting the same amount in terms of, you know, success. So it's not you can't necessarily look at, you know, someone, you know, there's always an element of luck when it comes to being a goal scorer, but it isn't as if though he has seen a precipitous drop off in his shooting percentage, which is usually the first thing you look at when a goal scorer isn't scoring. He had some really nice chances the other night against Carolina. Or was it against St. Louis? Sorry, he had a couple chances against St. Louis on Sunday, last Sunday.
But he had the breakaways against Carolina.
He had a couple breakaways in
that's
Carolina.
That's right. He did have some chances against Carolina. There are too many games. The NFL is making their schedule 17 games. Let's make the NHL schedule 17 games.
Well, there was about 6 minutes to go in the first, and Carolina was up 1-0. It was just him and Mrazek, and could have tied it up at one. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't go his way. Peter Mrazek, by the way, that's, you know, the big...
A cool 9-1 lifetime against the Nashville Predators.
Unbelievable, and he's never lost in Bridgestone Arena. How do you explain that?
You can't. Some things just can't be explained, Darren. But to Chase's point, yes, the players that we've talked about, whether it be Philip Forsberg or Victor Arvidsson or Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene, those four in particular, need to see their... contributions on the score sheet elevate this team has any chance of making it to the playoffs.
And I think that's the thing that none of us, including those within the organization, can explain of just why have they been that way. You know, why it hasn't worked or that it's been a down year. I mean, Ryan Johansson, you know, keeps coming up of, like, there are games where he shows flashes of being the Ryan Johansson that everybody, you know, has known him to be. And, you know, whether it's, Darren, you bring up when he's angry, Ryan Johansson, that's when you really get the most out of him. Okay, well, why is that the case? Why can't it be every night? You know, Matt Duchene was the big fish that David Poile was after for so long, finally gets him, and it's been, meh. Victor Arvidsson hasn't been the same since the injury. Now, he's coming around, like, you're starting to see it in flashes, but still not quite the same. And then, as we mentioned, Philip Forsberg.
Yeah, with Matt Duchene, you know, last year he had 70 points, he had 31 goals, and I don't want to say that it was smoke and mirrors, but there was an element of luck to that. He shot 18% last year, which I believe is a career high. This year, he's shooting 9.6%. His career average is 12.7, according to Hockey Reference, so he's underperforming in that aspect. But I mean, Matt Duchene is an interesting player to me just because we know the skill that he possesses, but he has never been a player in his career who makes teams significantly better. You know, some of that has to do with the fact that he's played for some bad teams. You know, Colorado was not good for a lot of the time he was there. Ottawa wasn't good. I mean, he played for Columbus last year and had a big hand in helping that team not only make the playoffs, but sweep Tampa in the first round in an historic upset. But he's always been better, I think, as a sidekick versus a, you know, one of the stars of your team. And Ryan Johansson is sort of facing that as well, because we've seen Ryan Johansson play incredible hockey for this group when he's got that fire in his belly. But you wonder sometimes, you know, how much that fire roars inside of him, for lack of better phrasing. So, you know, with Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, they're both good players, but, you know, on better stacked teams, they're not number one and number two necessarily. So, you know, Matt Duchene's drop off the season is a bit surprising, but I was always a bit skeptical of just how much he was going to be able to produce for this team.
Kind of what you just laid out, isn't that a little bit, as I'm a little froggy, excuse me.
Yes.
Isn't that what John Hines has kind of been saying after his message constantly since he's been here? A little bit of what you've been saying, isn't that what you think he's seen and saying?
Which I think David Poyle has said it with us a few times.
Well, that's why in Vancouver a few weeks ago, those four players we've been talking about spent most of their game experience in Vancouver sitting on the bench. And John Hines talked about how he distributes ice time. He says he does not have a doghouse. He's not going to lock a player in there and leave him in there. But he does want to make his point abundantly clear that the players that are playing well are going to be the ones that play, regardless of your stature on the team. And you've got to keep your ice time and you've got to earn your ice time. And you look at the way that the ice time has been distributed since John Hines took over. You know, Mikhail Granlund and Kyle Turris have seen 2-plus more minutes per game. Ryan Johansson has seen 2-plus minutes fewer per game. I don't think that's not a coincidence. You know, I think that John Hines there is a clear hierarchy that I think is developing in terms of the forwards that John Hines trusts the most.
The Buffalo Sabres have placed defenseman Zach Bogosian on unconditional waivers with the intention of terminating his contract.
No. That's my preemptive no to people listening, whether the Predators should Zach Bogosian. The answer is no.
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 So no?
I'm just passing along what the Sabres have
done. I know, but before you receive a text or a call that's saying, we should go after Zach Bogosian, don't do it.
You're squashing it immediately.
Yes. No.
Adam, good to see you. We'll be listening tonight from 6 until 6:30. Smash Brothers.
Yes. And then you at 6:30.
Yeah. It's the lead-in. So check out Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley 6 to 6:30. Then I'll take over pregame at 6:30, leading you up to Puck Drop in Chicago, Preds and Blackhawks. He's Adam Vingan from The Athletic, and we appreciate him coming in as always. When we come back, Bill Barnwell will kick off the second hour. That's next.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.